The Army's been working for the past several years on a more comprehensive approach to fitness instead of one that measures things like how many push-ups somebody can do or how fast somebody can run. But when it comes to the overall health of the force, the Army's Surgeon General says her biggest concern is how much sleep they're getting. And what they're getting is not enough. Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu writes about it in this week's edition of Inside the Reporter's Notebook. The issue is not limited to the Army, but it's striking that the Army sees this as its biggest fitness challenge right now, Jared.
I think that's right. And to be clear, General Patricia Horoho, the Army Surgeon General, sees the potential for the Army to be a national leader if it pulls this off correctly. And you're right, this is a national issue. And I must confess my judgment call about putting this story first up in the notebook this week might be skewed by the fact that my own dear sweet daughter has just entered this dreaded terrible twos phase of life that I've been hearing about.
So you sleep about 2 hours a night.
That's correct. So, but no, in all seriousness, this was a bit surprising. We spent quite a bit of time talking with General Horoho this morning about all things Army medicine, and she's very concerned about this. The Army has a whole public health campaign based around what it calls a triad. The other two things are nutrition and physical fitness, but she says the sleep issue is the one that's most concerning to her. So 30 years ago, the Army's data showed that soldiers, like most other people, were getting about 8 hours of sleep per night. And as many of our daily life experiences tells us, that's no longer true for the general population. For soldiers, it's now down to about six, according to their surveys. So General Horoho pointed us to some studies that show that 6 hours of sleep, if you do that for as little as a week, for six nights in a row, your cognitive function is cut back by about 20%. And it's about the equivalent of a blood alcohol level of 0.08, the legal driving limit in every state. And based on that, she's been really hammering the Army to get some more sleep, starting with its senior leaders. And she claims that she's had some success. Generals including Ray Odierno, the Army Chief of Staff, have gotten the message, and she says they've changed their behavior and made sleep more of a priority. She says she briefs every single new general officer about this when they first take command, and she basically tells them, look, you're supposed to be a strategic thinker if you've gotten this far in your military career and you've been posted as the commander of a battalion or a brigade, if you've got stars on your shoulder of any kind, really, and you're not going to pull that off with only 80% of your brain power behind you. And it goes bigger than that, that the Army's making its business to get into the sleep lives of the rank and file, too. Horoho says that's for the reason that I talked about a minute ago, the theory that the effects of sleep deprivation are pretty similar, actually, to alcohol impairment.
We would never let a soldier in our formation intoxicated. Why would we let soldiers in the formation with sleep deprivation? Why would we have bus drivers driving our children that are sleep deprived? Why would you have in our nation someone, you know, practicing surgery if you're sleep deprived? I think this is the most important thing our nation can do right now, is focusing on sleep. So that is where we're tackling it.
And so that gets kind of the point that we started off with, that she thinks this is something that the Army can lead the nation on if it does it correctly. One of the more interesting things is that it's going beyond the traditional sort of things that you would expect an Army healthcare system to do. It's looking at things like alternative medicine, yoga, acupuncture, and mindfulness training. I'm not sure exactly which one of those General Odierno is using to help him sleep at night better, more clearly, but the Army is clearly taking this seriously throughout its ranks. She says that the Army is also using its comprehensive soldier and family fitness program to just communicate to folks that they need to do simple things like looking around their bedrooms and see how many blinking lights from electronic devices they have going off around their bedrooms. The average, according to her, is 6 to 7, which sounds about right based on my personal experience. My wife hates that. And they've even developed a new app, a performance triad app for both iPhone and Android that gives sleep suggestions for people at various positions in the Army. So, the Army also obviously recognizes that if you're out on a patrol and you're assigned to go do a mission for 36 hours a night, 36 hours at a time, you're probably not going to get your 8 hours every single night. So they include ways to bank sleep ahead of time to kind of mitigate those effects. effects.
I love a lot
to say about sleep. Sorry.
I love the term sleep hygiene. And I have to confess, when I first read the notes that you sent in for the reporter's notebook this week, I thought, okay, this is just another goofy term that somebody's come up with all due respect to the general. And as I read it, it makes total sense. And the comparisons that she uses are very vivid and very striking. And I think it's something that we can expect to see, especially the other branches of the military pursue. Do we have any sense that anybody else is onto this, Jared?
I don't have a personal sense of that right now. I can tell you that it was captivating to hear her talk about it in the room this morning. And what's going to be interesting is going to be how the Army embraces this with their warrior culture.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they just say this is a bunch of froofy nonsense that we're not really interested in paying any attention to, or whether people really do come around to the idea that, yeah, this actually matters in terms of how well I can do my job, and we get past this idea of, I'll sleep when I'm dead. I think that is something that is kind of ingrained in not just the military's culture, but a lot of the general culture right now, that you can substitute caffeine, which frankly I do, a lot of us do, for sleep, and expect your brain and your general performance to be as up to par as it would be if you just got 8 hours of sleep the previous night. She seems to think that if we as an entire country move past that and actually get a decent night's sleep every night, a lot of other consequences are going to follow from that. Domestic violence will go down. Obesity will go down. Even things like post-traumatic stress disorder, which the military is obviously struggling with in large ways and has for the past dozen years, things like that will go down. We'll see. And the military is in a good place to study that sort of thing because it keeps better statistics on that sort of data than the cobbled together health system that we have as a more civilian population could ever possibly hope to do.
Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu inside the reporter's notebook this week. And another item that you have in the notebook is energy use by the Department of Defense. Mike, first question, when I see the subhead in your story, in the notebook, DOD energy use falls to lowest level on record. I'm a skeptic, Jared. Compared to what? What's the context?
Well, there are two important things here. So, unfortunately, the first time that the Energy Department started measuring agencies' individual department-by-department energy use was 1975. When it comes to DOD, that's a particularly bad year to start measuring because it's the year Saigon fell and everyone started withdrawing from Vietnam. Nonetheless, if you look at the graphs from this report that the Energy Information Administration put out yesterday, they've gone down on a very consistent basis every single year. So that's one important fact. DOD's overall energy use, both in terms of the electricity that it uses on its military bases and the liquid energy that it uses on its jets and its transport aircraft to fly people and things all over the world, those have all been going down. And DOD's overall share of the federal energy bill, basically, has also gone down from 87% in 1975 to 78% as of fiscal year 2013. According to this EIA report that came out yesterday. So I think what you have to draw from that is that these are actually the results of concrete policy decisions instead of just to and fro things that follow basically what the military's overall level of activity is in any given year. Again, we'll post these graphs on federalnewsradio.com, but they follow a very consistent trend, and I think the policy decisions that DOD has made over the past few years are pretty apparent in that. EIA points to a few things, for example, and these are actually really government-wide things, like the Energy Independence and Security Act back in 2007, which included mandates for every agency to reduce what's called their energy intensity in all federal buildings. So DOD lowered that energy intensity by 17% compared to 2003 over a 10-year time horizon, and 27% from from 2015 to 2013 when it comes to its petroleum consumption. So those are, I mean, those are real actual reductions that don't just have to do with, as I put it in the notebook this week, how busy the military is. Those are things that DOD actually has done on a proactive basis to reduce its energy use. And I frankly think they should be congratulated on it.
Some pretty impressive numbers that you provide that came out of that report, and it's included inside the reporter's notebook on federalnewsradio.com. One more item I want to ask you about, and that is a fairly large change, it seems to me, for the Army Force Generation process.
Yeah, this is something we know very little about so far because the process is not very well developed. Just to back up for a second, people may know it as R4 Gen, and it's basically the way the Army trains and produces combat-ready forces. Right now, it works in basically three buckets. One is, a bucket of troops that is ready to deploy to a fight at any given moment. That's usually meant Afghanistan so far. Another bucket that means that people have just come back from the fight. They're doing things like reintegrating with their families, doing some limited individual-based training, and a second bucket after that where they're starting to really gear up, doing unit-level training, integrating new equipment into their forces, that kind of thing. What's basically going to happen is R4 Gen, as we know it, is going to go away. That first bucket, which is called the reset group of forces, is going to go away. So there's basically just going to be this compressed cycle of, you're either ready or you're training. It remains to be seen exactly how that's going to work out, but it almost certainly means that the period that Army forces have left to do that training, reintegration with their families, reintegrating new equipment into their units is going to be compressed in time. We heard from the Army's Major General Gary Cheek, the Assistant Deputy Chief of Staff for Plans, Policy, and Programs earlier this week, that this basically was a thing that worked really well during Iraq and Afghanistan when the Army had a lot of forces, but it can't be executed at the levels of forces that they have right now as they draw down from 490 to 450,000 to potentially as low as 420,000 if full sequestration goes into effect beyond 2017. So it bears watching as we see how that process goes forward. But what we do know for sure is R4 Gen, as folks have known it up until now, looks like it's going away.
R4 Gen, we hardly knew you. Thank you very much, as always, Jared. It's great to have you on the program.
Always a pleasure.